Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first of three Healthy Ninja Skills classes so you can kick life's ass before it sees you coming. And tonight's topic is how to eat like a ninja. Thank you guys all so much for being here. I have a little housekeeping before we get started. This call will last about an hour, and about half of it will be question and answer. So I ask that you really take this time for yourself and try not to multitask. I know it's really hard. We all live really busy lives. We have a lot to do, but really just give yourself this time to focus and be present for a while. I also ask that you try to find yourself a relatively quiet place, just in case if you're on the call live or if you're listening to the recording, just so you can hear better. And we just talked about if it's not possible, then please mute your own line once we open the lines up again to save everyone from background noise. And just to get us all started, let's all take a deep breath in through the nose and exhale through your mouth. And one more time, inhale and exhale. Mostly that's for me, but it pretty much makes everybody feel better, so might as well get it. My name is Stacey Spensley. I'm a healthy life coach and the founder of CenterStageWellness.com. And I support overwhelmed men and women to make sustainable diet and lifestyle changes so they can feel in control and kick ass at life. Some of you on the call have worked with me before. Many of you have not, and I'm excited to connect with you. But I thank you all for taking the time to join me tonight or listen to the recording, and I'm really excited to support you over the next 3 weeks. So for those of you who don't know me, just a little bit of background on where I come from and kind of what the point is of these calls. I have been a perfectionist for my entire life. I've always worked really hard, and for a really long time, I was always sick and unhealthy. I worked retail for a number of years. I worked long hours. It sort of sucked my soul, ate crappy mall food, and dinner was always pasta or frozen pizza. Then I left that job to go back to my college major career of stage managing theater, where I worked even longer hours in a job that required perfection with very little support, and I basically subsisted on coffee and carbs. I had chronic sinus infections, migraines, insomnia, and was constantly exhausted. And that sounds pretty miserable, and it kind of was. I mean, I was doing work that I really, on some level, enjoyed. But as I like to say, I was tired of wearing my martyr pants. And I really had an aha moment when I went to see an acupuncturist I'd met through theater. And she introduced me to the idea of holistic health, and it absolutely changed my life. Very, very slowly. I had never connected my diet to how I actually felt. Doctors said I was actually pretty healthy, other than the fact that I felt like crap all the time, but I wasn't overweight, I didn't have high blood pressure, anything like that. So that's when I started learning about food as medicine. And I was also introduced to the concept of mindful eating, the impact of stress and sleep on my health and life, and how our current medical system just isn't set up to support lifestyle changes. The doctors recommend them, but they don't have the time to help patients implement. So for me, it was a really long process. It took me 3 years to stop drinking the coffee that was causing not only my insomnia, but also some adrenal fatigue. I just recently started doing yoga. Part of that journey for me was becoming a certified holistic health coach through the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. So if you compare my life then and now, they look very, very different. But what worked for me wasn't making big, drastic changes. It was taking small steps that added up to big change. And that's what I really want to offer you over the next 3 weeks. So instead of giving you a bunch of information that then you have to implement, feel overwhelmed and don't do it, giving you little tidbits of information that's really digestible so that you can implement it and take action in your own life to really start making some changes. So that's kind of the basic plan. Overhauling your whole life, terrifying. Three tiny changes a week, it's a step in the right direction, and it's totally doable. And so you've already started by taking the first step and signing up for this class and showing up or listening to the recording that we will hopefully be recording at some point. So tonight, I am giving you some stealthy ninja tricks that will help you feel better from the moment you get up each day, build awareness and accountability into your diet, and give you tools for portion control without weighing, measuring, or going hungry. I feel like a lot of people feel that these big changes are going to take these drastic measures. And so my goal is to help you get some concepts that you can sneak into your life with ninja-like stealth that aren't going to feel like you're deprived or doing anything really hard. So a couple things I want to clarify before we get going in the content. I use the word diet to mean the food that you eat. I never mean a way of restricting foods as a means of weight loss. Going on a diet isn't what's going to help. Eating a healthy diet is what will. Some people may have been to me as clients. Some of you might have done other free events with me, and some of you are totally new. You're all in different places, and that's totally okay. Wherever you are is the right place for you. It doesn't matter where anyone else is, where you want to be. You have to start from where you are. So it's kind of like yoga teachers, or as my friend was saying yesterday, yoga guides. They're not there to tell you what to do. They're there to suggest what they think you could do, and if you can't do it, adapt. And then two phrases that recently, I got a little sort of smack in the head on this. Two phrases that often come up when you're learning stuff like this is, I know that already, and that won't work for me. And I am totally stealing this from the fabulous Marie Forleo because it's just so good. But we're doing a little reframe on these bad boys. And if you have a pen and paper, you should write this down. So if the phrase, I know that already, comes up for you, you want to flip that into, what can I learn from this? So I know that becomes, what can I learn? And that won't work for me becomes, how can this work for me? And if you legitimately can't figure one of those out, ask it during the Q&A. That's what the Q&A is for. That's why I put it in the call. So tip number one for this evening is, ninjas, stay hydrated. You can't kick ass if you are dehydrated. This sounds really simple, but it's so important. I have had clients make huge breakthroughs, lose lots of weight, and still they say that the most important thing that they learned in the 6-month program was to drink more water. So our bodies are, on average, 60% water, and most of us are chronically dehydrated. You may think of dehydration as being thirsty, or even those extreme cases, athletes or desert dwellers who are severely dehydrated, but even 1 to 2% water loss can cause significant physiological changes. For somebody who weighs about 150 pounds, that's only about 3 cups of water. So I found this gem in the most reliable source I could, Wikipedia. But symptoms of mild dehydration include thirst, decreased urine volume, abnormally dark urine, unexplained tiredness, irritability, lack of tears when crying, headache, dry mouth, dizziness when standing, and in some cases, insomnia. Mild dehydration has also been shown to negatively impact people's moods. Initially, one experiences thirst and discomfort, possibly along with dry skin and constipation. Athletes may suffer a loss of performance up to 30% and experience flushing, low endurance, rapid heart rate, elevated body temperature, and rapid onset of fatigue. So, Wikipedia, but I say it has some truth to it. So if any of these sound familiar, let me highlight a few that I hear a lot from clients and family and friends, are tiredness, irritability, headache, and fatigue. A little interesting, I think. So, again, I see this a lot. We're tired, we're cranky, we have a headache. What's the Band-Aid solution? Caffeine or sugar. The actual solution is water. And summer is a really great time to work on this because it's actually warm and water sounds more appealing at this time of year. So I have put together 3 solutions for you to get started getting rehydrated. In a perfect world, you could apply them all, but just start with one, see how it works for you, and gradually add the rest in as it fits into your life. So my clients are all going to laugh at this one because I'm kind of a broken record about this, but the first tip is to drink a glass of room temperature water first thing in the morning. Add a slice of lemon if you're feeling super fancy. If you don't have a cat like mine who knocks over all unsupervised beverages in the house, you can even keep it on your bedside table and drink it when you're still in bed. There are no universals in nutrition except for one. Everyone is dehydrated in the morning. You sweat at night. Some people drool. You wake up, you go to the bathroom, you haven't drunk or eaten anything in hopefully 6 to 8 hours. Everyone is dehydrated in the morning. I used to be starving every morning as soon as I got up for about 20 years. I'd get up, like you couldn't talk to me. I'd be foggy, headachey, cranky. Nope, dehydrated. So I started drinking my glass of water and immediately noticed a difference. Even my husband, who is really contrary, doesn't listen to any of the stuff that I do, he does this every day, And you don't have to chug it, just sip it down. So step one, drink water in the morning. Tip number two, when you feel hungry, have a glass of water and wait 5 minutes. Especially if you work a 9-to-5 type job, if you ever hit that 3 o'clock slump in the afternoon, you're halfway between lunch and dinner, you start feeling some grumbling in your stomach, try drinking a glass of water. If you're still hungry afterwards, then definitely have a snack, but try the water first. And another tactic that can work for you, if you notice a pattern of this in the afternoon, is set an alarm, like on your phone or your computer, or to pop up a reminder to drink more water in the afternoon before you get hungry. Our bodies send us a lot of signals, and we often ignore them. Sometimes we ignore symptoms of thirst, so our body uses hunger to get our attention because food contains water, so our body tries to get us to ingest water any way it can. So the problem with this is that we actually aren't hungry, but we end up eating when we don't need to. And then tip number three is BYOW and bring your own water. So you know when you first switched to using reusable grocery bags and you forgot them every damn time you went to the store, but now that you finally have it as a routine, it feels weird to go without them? Apply this to your new best friend, your water bottle. So people often say they don't like buying bottled water because it's wasteful or the water at work tastes funky or whatever. So bring a bottle from home, set it at your desk, and take regular sips all day. I was talking to a friend, and she realized that she uses her travel coffee mug to drink water from at work, but she didn't want to actually take the time to go and wash it out. And so she bought a second travel mug that didn't taste like coffee, had 2 cups at work, and then just rotated. So it was really easy once she thought of the solution instead of just getting stuck on the problem. So pick one of those and try it on for size. Arguments I often get are, I don't like water. And especially if you're used to drinking sweetened beverages, water can taste kind of blah. So a couple ways to fancy it up. When I was weaning myself off my serious Coke habit, and I mean soda in dentist cringing amounts, I switched to mineral water with natural flavors. So it had fizz, it tasted like lemon or lime, but there was no sugar, there were no chemicals, there were no calories. If you are against effervescence, as some of my friends are, you can make your own really simple flavored waters. Just fill a pitcher or a jar with water and add strawberries or lemon, orange or lime slices, fresh mint, fresh rosemary, cucumber slices, or even chunks of watermelon. Just let it steep for a couple hours and enjoy. Another one is, but I drink other things that have water in them. Does coffee count? So I had a client in my last group program who said in our very first call, Stacey, you're not going to make me give up my Diet Coke, are you? And I said, no, you can drink as much Diet Coke as you want, just add more water into your day. At the end of the program a couple months later, as much Diet Coke as she wanted was zero. You don't have to give anything up, just add this in. If you drink a lot of coffee, have a glass of water before a cup of coffee or in between. And one of my favorites, I thought you were supposed to drink 8 glasses of water a day. Really, a better guide is to divide your body weight in pounds in half and aim for that many ounces of water per day. So if you're 5 feet tall and 105 pounds, you need less water than someone who's 6'2 and 200 pounds. A good guide is that you should be going to the bathroom about once every 2 hours, and you should be peeing clear. So to recap, drink a glass of water first thing in the morning. Do it. When you feel hungry, drink a glass of water and wait 5 minutes. And bring your own water with you. So ninja tip number two. Ninjas know what they eat. I get a lot of questions about counting calories, and I am not a calorie counting advocate. Recommended daily values are kind of like gene sizes. They're based on a made-up person who doesn't actually exist. So no genes actually fit anybody, and the recommended daily values aren't actually feasible for any human being, and they're made up. So your basal cell rate and your metabolism are different than mine. What I eat isn't what you should eat to feel good. So the solution is you need to figure out what does make you feel good and what makes you feel bad and why you're eating it. So if you're not going to count calories, but you want to know what you're eating, what's the solution? And that is the food journal. And I'm sending you guys a simple template that you can use, or you can create your own. It's not to judge your diet as good or bad. It's simply a tracking tool. It's like writing down your mileage or expenses on a business trip. You don't even have to change anything this week. just write down what you eat. It's not to track calories, and it doesn't have to be specific. You can just write down a cup of coffee or a bowl of cereal or a ham sandwich or burger and fries. The other components of the template that I sent you ask how hungry you are when you eat and how you feel emotionally. And there are three main benefits to this tracking. The first is that you can't change your diet if you don't know how you're eating already. And I fall victim to this myself, but really often we're eating mindlessly. We're at a buffet, we want to get our money's worth, we're eating while we're talking, on the computer, watching TV, you just finish what's in front of you. Writing it down gives you a visual record to notice patterns. If you think of it like a science experiment and approach it with curiosity, it's a lot more friendly. Just think, what are you eating anyway? The first time I did this myself, I didn't think I was much of a snacker. And then I noticed that I would need to take a break from working on the computer, so my excuse would be to go and poke around in the kitchen. These are the dangers of working at home. And I was actually snacking a lot more than I realized until I actually wrote it down. So without the food journal, I wouldn't have known. The second benefit is that you're forcing yourself to be accountable. Sometimes it's really easy to eat that third brownie, but it is way harder to write down that you ate that third brownie. And it's not to make you feel guilty. It's just to pull back the curtain where you're out of alignment. If you want to lose weight or eat less sugar, but you keep telling yourself you'll start tomorrow or eating that third brownie, are you really respecting your own desires? And there's an author, Jeannie Ross, who is really amazing, and she talks about the idea of eating in public. And if you wouldn't eat it in front of someone else, you probably just don't want to eat it. Putting it down on paper in front of your own eyes is often public enough. The third benefit is that it really helps to identify patterns. So about a year and a half ago, I was working on a show, and I was noticing that I would get these crazy sugar cravings in the afternoon after our lunch break, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And this wasn't technically food journal related, but finally I realized that when I ate with a specific coworker, she stressed me out so much that I would get this fight or flight response and it'd be craving candy. And I'd go to the vending machine, I felt like a zombie, just like craving candy brains. And until I noticed that common thread, I didn't know what to change. The next day after I noticed that, I was like, oh, I'm just going to go eat in the other room. I'm going to make some phone calls. No candy cravings. Totally fine. So if you eat emotionally or reward yourself after a long day or punish yourself or eat out of boredom or loneliness or grief, you might not even know it. And there's nothing wrong with that, but realizing those circumstances that are causing your behaviors that you want to change can really be the catalyst for setting you up for success. So to know what you eat, fill out the food journal, or you can find a method that works for you. I have a couple recommendations for smartphone apps in the handout that's coming to you, but a lot of people find that frustrating, especially if they cook a lot, because it is really better for processed foods. So find what works for you. Just write it down. If you don't do it every moment of every day, that's okay. Just give it a try and see how it feels. So tip number three is that ninjas eat mindfully. And I mentioned this briefly in tip number two, but there is a lot of mindless eating going on. So how often do you eat while you're distracted? So checking your email or reading the news during breakfast, eating lunch at your desk, eating dinner in front of the TV or even in the car. So like the food journal, this tip is really about awareness. A common reason people give for overeating is that food just tastes so good. And this is ironically actually not true. One problem is that we tend to eat so quickly that we don't actually taste the food we're eating at all, which is why we want to keep eating it even when we're not physically hungry anymore. We just want more flavor. An example I really like to use is comparing two different methods of eating chocolate. I am pretty confident in my ability to put away an entire one-pound bag of M&Ms, but I admit they're basically half chocolate and half wax. So you expect chocolate, and you expect to get a certain amount of fulfillment from eating this. And when you only get half that much, because it's half wax, you think, oh, I'll just eat a second handful. That will make me feel like I've eaten a bunch of chocolate. So you still never achieve that concentration of chocolatiness until you realize that your hand hits the bottom of the bag, you don't really feel that great, and you're still not satisfied. Now compare that scenario to the richest flourless chocolate torte you've ever eaten. Imagine, if it helps, some ganache. you pick up a tiny little dessert fork, you slice up a little small bite, and eat it. And it's super rich. It's so dense. It's so chocolatey. You can literally only eat a few bites out of this tiny sliver of cake. So being mindful helps you achieve that satisfaction out of appreciating the flavors. Another option for any beer drinkers, it's the difference between tasting a flight of craft beers versus a house party keg stand. So when we don't take the time to truly taste our food, we're not satisfied because we haven't really let ourselves experience it. And this is when we get up for seconds or thirds, even though we're not really hungry. And so many clients and friends tell me they struggle with portion control. And this is truly the most effective technique I've found. So you can keep on eating the exact same food you've been eating. The first time I heard about mindful eating, I was stress eating a hot fudge sundae in the middle of winter in the Midwest at 11 p.m. after my acupuncturist told me to avoid cold foods, dairy, and sugar. So we are all works in progress. I do not always do this, but when I do, I feel so much better, and I'm reminded of what a powerful tool it can be. So mindful eating simply asks you to be present to the experience of eating your food. So I have five suggestions here to get you started. The first one is serve in modest portions. We started eating at our house. We started eating dinner off our salad plates because our dinner plates are huge. So then you can still be part of the Clean Plate Club, but then it's a reasonable portion. It's harder to not eat what's in front of you than to put less in front of you in the first place. This is why it's really hard at restaurants, because most restaurant portions are triple the size of an actual serving, and we tend to want to eat what's in front of us. So using smaller plates, smaller bowls, or serving yourself a smaller scoop and saying you can go back for seconds if you want to is a really good place to start. The second one is eat without distractions. This one's really, really hard, and I usually get a lot of resistance from clients on this one. So don't be on the computer, don't be reading, don't be talking. So, and this is often not possible, especially depending on where you're eating a meal. But try it for one meal a day. If you can't do a full meal, start with 5 or 10 minutes and just see how it feels. But consider it part of your experiment. I mean, I definitely don't do this every day, but like today I made sure I ate lunch at the table by myself, giving myself a break from all the work I was doing this afternoon. Number three is eat with utensils instead of your hands and set down your utensils between bites. This forces you to slow down, gives you a chance to chew your food, and makes you feel more calm, which also aids digestion. It really helps you pace yourself. Some people also recommend even eating with chopsticks if that slows you down. So, number four is chew your food thoroughly. And this is super important for a lot of reasons. And I recommend starting this by counting how many times you chew and aiming for about 30 to 40 times. Other people can just distract from the mindfulness element because you're counting instead of focusing on the chewing. But when you're first starting out, I found it really helpful just to give you a number to aim for, getting that muscle memory in your body, and then working on it later. So when we don't thoroughly chew our food, we don't fully appreciate the flavors since it doesn't hit all of our taste buds. It actually hurts our digestion by leaving bigger pieces of food for our gut flora to break down, which can result in gas, especially when we're eating carbohydrates, because carbs are broken down by an enzyme that's only found in our saliva. And number five is don't take another bite until you've finished the one you already have. I read a description of this that said it's like interrupting when somebody's talking, is you're cutting that bite off when you take another bite before you're done. And setting down your fork between bites can really help on this one. So when you give yourself the chance to fully experience each bite of your meal, you're better able to tune into your body's signals and know when you're satisfied. Now, again, I'm a perfectionist, a recovering perfectionist, I should say. And keep in mind that this is a mindfulness practice. So you can't fail at this. I've had clients that they're like, oh, I'm really bad at this. And it's like, no, you're just learning. And so anytime you can try to be mindful, you're taking a step in the right direction. I catch myself eating too fast all the time, and I notice it affects my digestion. I definitely eat in front of the computer too much. This is not all or nothing. Start small. There's a Buddhist monk named Thich Nhat Hanh who wrote a book about mindfulness, and he says make the first bite a mindful bite. So if you start with that intention and just make sure that the first bite is mindful, at least that's one more that's mindful every day that wasn't before, and that's something, a foundation that you can build on. And it's easier to continue. So try these tactics, see what sticks, see how you feel, and see what works for you. And all of these tips are included in the worksheet that I sent you. You have your hydration hints, food journal template, and 5 tips for mindful eating. So you don't have to tackle them all at once, but your homework for tonight is to pick which one works for you. So sneak these healthy habits in and see what changes. If you're only going to do one, I would recommend drinking a glass of water first thing in the morning. Just try it, see how you feel. It's not going to hurt you. So that is your first ninja lesson. I don't want to overwhelm you with information because I really want this to be approachable. I find oftentimes people get really overwhelmed. They don't know what to choose from. So the key is really to take action because information without action doesn't do you any good. So with those tips in mind, I'd like to open up the lines and hear from a few people. And I'd love to hear if anything resonated with you, if you found something that you want to try to apply to your own life, or even if you have a moment of, oh, I knew that, that you managed to turn around and learn something from. And I'm curious if anybody has anything to comment or to ask.
Tracy?
Yes.
I do. I knew that you were supposed to drink water to help you stay hydrated during the day, and I actually knew that sometimes when you feel hungry, it's that you are thirsty. But I did not seem to apply that to the first thing in the morning after waking up. Of course, you would be hydrated. So that's great, and that I think will really help me get started with drinking water and being able to drink as much as I need throughout the day.
Excellent. So what do you think has kept you from drinking water before, even though you knew that?
I think it's, I am so used to drinking either soda or coffee or sugary drinks that, you know, water just doesn't really appeal to me that much taste-wise. And the only time I feel myself really wanting a glass of water is after I've worked out or if it's a really hot day or something like that. So I think this will help my body to say, hey, yes, you want water. And to help to remind me to drink water throughout the day, not other things.
Awesome. So just kind of a reminder to tune in, and it's a need for hydration, not a need for flavor.
Correct, yeah.
Excellent. Well, that's great. Keep us posted.
I really liked what you said about eating mindfully, because that's something I struggle with. But I like the tip to make the first bite a mindful bite, so it's much easier to, you know, be able to focus on just that first bite rather than trying to plan your whole meal that way.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because I'll often eat with other people and I'll find that I have to pace myself differently because if, you know, I talk really fast, I get really excited, I get really passionate about a topic, and I'll find myself eating faster. And so I'm having lunch with a friend, I have to really, really focus on taking breaks in the conversation, setting down my fork, things like that. Or, you know, if we're going to go out for lunch, we probably pick a place we wanted to eat to enjoy the food, and I want to be able to enjoy the food and the company. And so making sure that I'm separating those two in my head a little bit so that I can enjoy both is something that I've really worked on myself.
I would say, just kind of tacking on to what the previous person had said, I have dinner at home with my 2 kids who are 4 and 5 months old, and my husband's at work, and so I always feel as though I'm sort of scarfing my dinner down and trying to make dinner as short as possible because we have our routine that we have to stick to, and I guess just the idea of trying to be mindful with eating, but maybe sort of rearranging our routine around dinner so that it's not like trying to cram dinner into a short amount of time. It's something that I need to do so that I'm actually enjoying my dinner and not just inhaling my food and trying to rush kids along to bedtime and everything. And it's funny because my son, who's four, he's always telling me, like, I know how to savor my food, Mom, and you don't because you eat so fast. and it drives me nuts because he does take a long time to eat, but I should sort of follow his lead with that, I think, because he's a much more mindful eater than I am, I think, at this point.
That's awesome. That's a really great realization, and I love that he actually told you that.
And his dad taught him how to savor food, and it kind of drove me nuts that he did that because he's a very slow eater, but, I mean, he's probably a better eater than I am because he is taking his time with it and enjoying it and not just rushing through his meal. So,
For me, since I am a previous client, for me it's a lot of, oh, I forgot about that. Oh, I forgot about that. So for me it's a lot of a refresh. It's a refresher for me. So thank you.
Good. Well, so what do you think, when we were going through your program, what do you think made the biggest impact of those?
Out of everything that you listed?
Mm-hmm.
Hang on. Let me open up my notes because I was typing and taking notes. Probably the water in the morning because that's something that I do now that I never did before. That makes a big, big difference to the point where it got rid of all of my tension headaches.
Well, you only have them every day for 5 months.
Yeah, I know. Exactly, right? So that helped for me a lot because that also gets you on the right foot first thing in the morning. And then sets the pace for the rest of the day.
Good. So I think I'd like to do, because I think, again, my idea is not to overwhelm you with content. As Kim will verify, when I give you too much information, you go into sort of shutdown mode of, oh, my God, what do I do next? So I'm curious if any of you have any topics that I didn't cover with the tips, but anywhere that you feel stuck with food, with healthy eating, with how to kind of incorporate healthier habits into your life that you just don't know where to go with them.
Do you have any suggestions about, you know, focusing on the things that you want to change, even if the people around you aren't making those changes, or, you know, how to keep yourself on track when it's easy to kind of fall into other people's habits?
When you're feeling sabotaged by everyone you love?
Kind of, yeah.
I've heard that one before. Sometimes I feel like that with my own husband. I joke, and I'm only half joking, that my husband dreams of a day when I, you know, come out of my office and say, you know, honey, I've decided we're just going to eat a constant rotation of pizza, Chipotle, and mac and cheese from my mom forever. And he'll be like, yeah. And then I say, no, we're going to have Brussels sprouts. And he's like, no. So I definitely understand. And so one thing is that people are really resistant to change. And I think the funny thing about food is that people go into changing their diets with this mindset of, my whole life is going to change. My whole, like, I won't be able to go out with my friends for happy hour. I won't be able to eat the foods that I love. I won't be able to eat my holiday tradition foods that my mom makes that are my favorite. And so a lot of people go into it with this idea of deprivation or restriction or loss as opposed to adding things in. So I think really the key is adding things in really slowly. I know when Kim and I started working together, Kim is a fantastic cook. She cooks all of her meals from scratch, but she was eating a lot of comfort food and stuff like that. And so what we worked on at the beginning was starting to just tweak what she was already eating in really small ways. So I had her make a list of what are the dishes, like I call them your default meals. So when you come home at the end of the day and you're like, okay, I need to make dinner. Like, I only have, you know, half hour, 45 minutes. What can I throw together without thinking very hard? Because that's what we tend to make. Because we're all busy. We have a lot going on. We have a lot of commitments. We don't have a lot of brain power to commit to making, you know, the meal out of Gourmet magazine every night. So if that's frozen pizza, if that's pasta with sauce from a jar, that's totally fine. So start with that because you don't have to use a lot of brain power, and add one thing. So if you're going to have a frozen pizza, throw on, you know, some spinach. or mushrooms or green pepper or whatever. If you're going to have pasta sauce from a jar, just put in some I shred zucchini since my husband will not eat it if it's in chunks. He will eat it if it's shredded. Do you know, he's like training me to have a five-year-old. I don't understand. Or throw in, you know, just buy a bag of pre-washed spinach and throw in a handful of spinach and wilt it in the sauce so that you don't have to think any harder. I mean, it's like two more brain cells worth, but you're making small changes. And then gradually, so now you're adding the spinach. Well, then you add the zucchini. Then you start maybe you start making your own sauce with tomatoes from a can. And you kind of gradually wean yourself so that it's not this big drastic jump. I was actually talking to my husband about this earlier because we've been married about 5.5 years, and I didn't used to eat this well. And he doesn't really want to eat that well, but his diet's improved so much, not so much because he's made changes, but because he just kind of goes along with mine. And we don't always eat the same thing because he doesn't like the same food that I do all the time. But, you know, it's just these small changes that have added up really make the difference. So does that help a little bit?
Yeah, thank you.
Or I also say, like, I had a client who was really concerned about, you know, going out for happy hours, which is a big social aspect of her job, and doing things like, you know, small shifts. So if you're going to get a burger, don't get fries, get a salad on the side. You still can have the burger, eat it a little bit more mindfully, and then you eat the salad first, and then at least you had one green thing in your day. Or I've had other clients, like, add one salad a week just to get in the habit of doing it, get yourself used to it, and it doesn't seem like such a big jump.
I have, where I am stuck, I know a lot of what I should be doing. I can break it down into small steps. It's just doing it consistently that is my problem. Like, I'll get all gung-ho and then stop, even though it's in a manageable area. And I'll get to a point where I'll lose a certain amount of weight and then sabotage it. So there's something deeper going on that's sticking me. So that's what's sticking me.
That is, you are not alone. I just wrote a newsletter like last week about self-sabotage because it's such a huge issue for people. So I would say, if you don't mind sharing, kind of what's your weight loss goal?
Oh, well, my weight loss goal is to lose 75 pounds, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very obese, so I need to lose that 75 pounds. But it seems like I get to a certain point and then just can't go past that.
Mm-hmm. So was there a point when you weighed the goal weight that you're aiming for?
Yes.
When was that?
That was about 15 years ago in college.
Mm. So if you lost, that's probably a while ago. So what would your life look like now if I snapped my fingers and you lost 75 pounds? What would change for you?
And that's the thing. I think what I can think of is just these positive effects that would happen, that I would feel more self-confident. I would feel I wouldn't have high blood pressure problems anymore. I wouldn't be on the medication for that. So things like that is what goes through my mind.
Mm-hmm. So generally when we're self-sabotaging, there's a couple of things involved. The first one is fear.
Yeah.
Because do you think you'd be happier if you lost 75 pounds?
You know, there's always that temptation to think that, but I know deep down inside that that's really not going to be the case. Like, yes, you know, am I going to be able to, you know, wear nice dresses and pretty clothes and not have to worry about plus size clothing? Yes. You know, that's going, but am I going to be happier? Not per se, no. Will I have more confidence? Yes. But is that something that's going to make me happy? No.
So this is a pretty complicated issue. So I don't think we're gonna solve this right now. But a couple things to think about. I worked with this on a couple of clients that really think about, like, when you look in the mirror, who do you see?
Okay.
Like, what are the thoughts when you look at yourself? I mean, what are you saying?
Yeah, and, you know, I wish my stomach wasn't so big. I don't like this. I don't like that. Yeah, that sort of thing is what I...
So, to put it in the blunt and inappropriate term, if you look in the mirror and see a fat girl, you're going to act and treat yourself like a fat girl.
Yeah.
So, think about the things you're saying to yourself when you look in the mirror, and think if you'd say that to a friend.
Okay.
Would you?
No.
Right. But we'll say them to ourselves, right?
Yeah.
We're terribly mean to ourselves. We're really, I told my client the other week, I was like, honey, I don't have to judge you. You're doing it fine on your own.
Yeah.
You don't do it for me. So that's the thing, too, is so if there's that voice inside all of us that just keeps yapping and yapping, and, you know, it's a lot of people can assign it to, like, you know, it sounds like if you have a really critical mom, it's your mom's voice, it's, you know, your grandma, it's, you know, a combination of people, but it's always you. And if you have that voice constantly undermining what you're doing, and you think, okay, I'm going to lose 75 pounds, and I'm going to feel confident, and you look in the mirror, and you're like, fat girls don't lose 75 pounds, fat girls eat cat cheeseburgers. Guess what you're going to have for lunch?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, yeah.
And you are so not alone. I have been through this exercise a number of times, and most people email me back, and they're like, so about the crying. So we started calling it in my last group program, it's the scary mirror exercise, because they all hated doing it, but it was so rewarding. So something I would suggest is, and this works for everybody, whether you're trying to lose weight or not, weight loss is almost an easier one to talk about because it's, you know, it's kind of cut and dry. It's like you lose the weight or you don't, but it's never just about the weight. It's never just about the food. So when you look in the mirror, find something that you like about yourself. Maybe you have a great smile. Maybe you have great hair. If you can't find something physical, maybe it's, I'm a really good listener. I'm a really good teacher. You know, I make really good cakes, whatever it might be. And when you look in the mirror, say something positive to yourself. Even better is write it down where you can see it and put it places. And so instead of looking in the mirror and seeing something negative, look in the mirror and see something positive. Does that make sense?
Okay.
And it's really hard, but I know you can do it.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Absolutely. No, I hired a coach for myself last month because I'm not doing what I want to do. I am hiring somebody to help me. And, oh, my gosh, there was so much weeping involved. And she had things. She's like, say it out loud. And it's so terrifying that we're so quick to criticize ourselves. And I'm sure all of us could just list off a number of things that are wrong with us. But if I ask you to, like, say something really nice about yourself, it's really, really hard to say it out loud.
Yeah,
so.
It was hard for me to think of something while you were saying that. I'm like, yeah.
So what did you think of?
So what did I think?
Mm-hmm.
I like the color of my highlights and my hair that I just got done. I do have nice eyes, pretty eyes. I like that about myself. I am generally a nice person. I like that about myself. I am, you know,
yeah.
I can be nice to everybody. So I am a good foster parent and a good wife. So those things I can be proud of.
Excellent. And if you lost 75 pounds, do you think you would be better at those things?
I think I would be better, you know, I could be better, a better parent, I think, in that I would have more energy and probably less irritable, and yeah, a better wife that way too, yes.
I think if you, it's also a big thing is that we get caught up in, well, I should lose the weight. And we're going to talk about this more next week in the Thinking Like a Ninja class. But when we think about things that, well, I should lose the weight because then I would be a better parent, you turn that around and what you're really saying is I'm not a good parent because I haven't lost this weight, and you're blaming yourself.
Yeah.
Which is, again, not very nice. And you're a nice person. So why would you be saying not nice things to yourself?
Yeah, I don't know. Somehow I learned that.
It's a process for everyone. So, and you know, and that's, I just joined an online training course, and it's a really supportive community of women. But, you know, women are, they're like, I'm so excited to do this, and I'm so scared, and, you know, all these things are coming up for me, and everybody's like, me too. So it doesn't matter, you know, there's always something. That's what, we're all works in progress.
Nice.
So, well, thank you. Thank you for sharing, too, because that can be really scary to share in front of people.
It's easier because I can't see anybody.
That's why I coach over the phone. It is. It's a lot easier. So, well, thank you. We have a couple more minutes. Anybody else have a place that they're stuck? Well, in that case, I'm going to make everybody think of something nice to say about themselves. So, Amanda, would you like to say something nice about yourself? Because I would like to hear you say something nice about yourself.
I'm often told that I have a very big heart, probably because I cry at everything.
Now, you say that you're told that. Do you believe that?
What's that?
The dog doesn't like me. Now you say you're told that. Do you believe that?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Okay. Making sure.
Sometimes it gets me in bad places. I just believe the world is a rainbow of love.
It's everybody has their gifts, and, you know, some people are pessimists, and the rest of us are just happy. So it's
yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Excellent. And Kim already went.
I've been told, and I do believe that I am good at crafty stuff and sewing and putting together projects for my kids.
That is true. You do amazing stuff for your kids. And you're really good, and you are a really good manager. You tried to quit, and they wouldn't even let you. Amy?
I would say that I have a good sense of humor.
Excellent. Anything else?
No. I'm just starting with one.
But you must have other redeeming qualities. You sound really
I'm
nice.
I'm sure.
All right. We'll let you pass. That'll be your homework.
Thank you.
Your additional homework. And Ms. Kim, best hostess in Orange County.
Are you saying I have to say something?
Yes. You have to tell everybody how amazing you are at something.
Oh, I don't know. I'm an excellent short order cook. There.
You're... Anything else that now that you've had a chance to kind of digest a little bit, anything else that came up, any last takeaways? I'll wrap up and let you guys get back to your lives and plotting how much water you're going to drink tomorrow.
I want to say, this is Amanda. I want to say it was great that when everybody had a chance to say something nice or good about themselves, none of it was physical. It was all about who we are as people.
Showing your big heart right there. I think it's so, I mean, we get bad up in the bad things. It's like, you know, they say that, you know, if something bad happens, you'll tell 20 people, and if something good happens, you'll maybe tell one. I think, you know, even, like, the idea of, like, the stitch and bitch, like, it's funny, but we tend to complain so much, and we don't focus on what's really going well and what we're really good at, and we focus on what we're bad at and what's not going well. Well, where's that going to get you? So thank you guys for playing along, and I really appreciate you guys taking the time to be here and for being so willing to share. I really, one of my core values is really providing a safe space for everybody, and in my groups I have that same thing, is really having a place where everybody can say something and not be afraid. And I think that Kim's contribution about sharing about your weight loss was really, really powerful, and I appreciate everybody being here for that too. So if anybody has any questions that you don't want to ask, feel free to email me. I hope you guys can make it next week where, like I said, we'll be talking more about the mindset stuff, which I think food point, and then you think about, oh, I want to eat better, and then all the reasons why you're not start coming up, and that's really where it gets more interesting. So I hope you guys can attend next week, and I thank you for bearing with me through these random technical difficulties, and you guys will also get the recording of whatever decided to record. And you should have gotten an email handout as well with all of the tips so that you can follow those and figure out what's going to work for you in your life. So thank you guys.